Live. Your family, friends, colleagues, and the public you serve need you. This message is brought to you by Penntime and Beasley Media Group. Learn more about Pennsylvania traffic incident management training at penntime.com.
WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
The following programming is sponsored by Carol Captis Holloway. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
More with Carol Holloway. I think that I have one of the best jobs ever. I really do. On this happy Earth Day, I get to bring on authors to talk about their books and their inspirations and what motivated them to write what they did. First of all, I want to let everybody know that we are live on Facebook today, as well as our podcast right here at WWDB. We are also live on Odyssey. The podcast will be up later today. If you tune in or you have to tune out and miss any of this, please don't tune out. And we are also on Instagram and, again, Facebook under Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. My guests are waiting in the wings. We have two amazing books today to interview and break down and find out the psychology behind them. Our second guest coming on in the second half of the hour is Charlie and Cheryl Young, who wrote Houdini's Last Handcuffs, and they have a direct connection to Houdini. But to start off, who doesn't like romance, an adventure, and a thriller, and all excitement wrapped up into one? Our guest right here, hi, Lori Elizabeth Murphy, wrote the book Dream Me Home. And it's a story of betrayal, infidelity, love, and it's just a chilling mystery by a psychotherapist. Okay, now, Lori, welcome to the show, first of all.
Thank you for having me, Carol.
Absolutely. Your book was fascinating. Did you being a psychotherapist have anything to do with writing the book or help you write this book?
Yes, I was working for 38 years as a psychotherapist. So all of my patient stories sort of took residence in my head. And little by little, they all formed what is the basis of this story.
Okay, before we get into the basics of the story, Dream Me Home, I mean, because who wouldn't want to relive their first love or any part of any relationship they had that they would like a do-over? Maybe not this way. But tell our listeners a little bit about your history. You're a New Jerseyite. You're right next door.
Yeah, I'm in Florida now, but I'm always a Jersey girl. So I had a first love when I was 16. And I was engaged to him. I was with him for 4 years. It didn't work out, really. It could have worked out. We were too young. But I kept in touch with him over the years. Now it's been 60 years. And we're long-distance dating. I'll say that part.
Okay. So your background is you're a registered nurse. And I'm reading my notes. Psychotherapist counselor.
Yeah.
So tell me exactly how those two go together and what exactly you do in that end, because you've written factual books, which are really interesting as well.
I co-authored factual books with my husband, who's deceased now. He was a psychologist, and we wrote about step-parenting and divorce and its implications for children and teenagers and how to wrangle them in to make them normal human beings. But always in my mind, I had stories in my head that I needed to tell. So now that I'm retired, I've told this story and there's going to be a sequel and a sequel to this.
Okay. So great background. So for those of you, besides having a great adventure here and a great mystery, for those of you that are parents, Lori has some amazing books on parenting. So please look them up after the show. So tell us what made you decide to go back and revisit like first love and how you managed to put all these characters together, because they're real situations. They're real dilemmas that we face pretty much every day.
I never forgot my first love, even though I went on to marry. But he was always in my mind. And after my husband died, I decided, okay, maybe, you know, maybe we'll give this a shot. So I got in touch with him, and I wanted to write this book based, I wanted it to be a love story. But, you know, characters have a way of making their own journey, at least mine do. And so my main character, Peggy Prescott, I thought was just going to come out with this love story. But instead, she took me on this mysterious journey where other characters came in, and she narrates this book actually from her grave. And so we don't know what happened to her, but we do know that we're hoping she's going to meet back up with her first love somehow, but she's going to have to figure out all these people and what they did to her as we go.
Is that kind of spiteful?
No, she actually, not in this book, but you stay tuned for the next one and we'll have to find out.
Okay. So our main character is Peggy Prescott, and she's a woman who on the outside seems to live a perfect life. Like so many people we know, they hide everything behind closed doors. They keep it quiet. But when she's dead, when she's found dead, suspicions turn to her closest friends. So let's talk about that. This happens after a robbery in her home?
Yes, happens after a robbery. And there was already a slight crack in the marriage when her physician, plastic surgeon husband, yanked her out of her hometown of Boston and took her to Florida. She was a pleaser, so she really didn't make too much of a big deal about it. She had two small children. But if there was a minimal crack, like we all have cracks in our marriages, it could have been repaired, but it wasn't. It got bigger and bigger and bigger, and finally she had to deal with it. And the home invasion was the impetus for her to really take a look at her marriage and the people around her and say, what's going on here? People generally speak off the cuff. They don't give it a lot of thought. And then they're usually sorry later for what they have either said or done. In this case, there are two very spiteful characters that know exactly what they're doing. And they do not like women particularly. So they have it out for women. The rest of the crew seemingly is just trying to plod along like the rest of us and not pay too much attention to what's right in front of their face.
Okay. You know, it's kind of crazy because as, you know, you talk about as her marriage falls apart, paranoia sets in, and she finds herself escaping into a world of dreams, you know, not being in reality. Do you find that people do that in real life?
A lot of people daydream. They have fantasies that they, you know, they look at their husband and they think maybe he could be somebody else, or what would have happened if I married somebody else? Then look at their wives and think, yeah, you know, she used to be a lot younger, a lot prettier, a lot more attentive when she didn't have the kids. So we all have the life we present and the life we have in our own minds.
Okay, so this is really a great mystery novel. And so you're telling us there's going to be a sequel to this. So you're not, I don't want to give anything away. So we're not ending the story. We're leaving people to their own imagination.
Yeah, well, there is an ending to the story that the reason I'm writing a sequel is I don't like a loose ending on stories. I think it's an insult to people when the author just leaves them hanging. So I ended this exactly the way I thought it should end. However, there are two camps. One agrees with me. The other one says, but it could have happened this way, right? And it could have. It didn't, but it could have. And so, and they also wanted to know, because these characters are larger than life people, and they wanted to know, what happened? What happened to this guy and this woman and this psychiatrist? And I'm like, I don't know, because they're fictional and they're gone. And I'm like, no, we want to know. So I thought, you know what? Okay, you want to know? Let's see. And so it's taking its own turn again. And what we all thought we knew in the first book is not at all what we're going to know in the second book.
So I found that with your characters, you can love them and you can hate them. And there's definitely an air of mistrust throughout the story. So it's like the perfect concoction. for this great mystery, a great thriller, and a love story as well. Did you base any of these characters on people you know?
I'm sure you're talking about the psychiatrist to start with.
Yes.
We in our practice were very kind and compassionate. He, unfortunately, is not the norm. But, you know, when people come into therapy, they come in a very vulnerable state. And so we probably do have a lot more power than we realize if we want to twist somebody's mind up. We don't, of course, want to do that. But unfortunately, this psychiatrist in my book did. He wanted revenge on women, and he got it.
Yes, definitely. So in our own lives are always complicated. And as the overview says, you know, misplaced loyalty, intrigue, and heartbreak. I mean, isn't that like kind of everybody's life to some extent?
It's called real life. We don't know. We all think we're in control of our lives. But to most extent, we're not at all. We can wake up in the morning and think we have a perfectly good schedule ahead of us. And, you know, maybe the baby gets sick or there's a car accident or somebody drops out or something. We don't have any obligation to anything other than to stay in the moment and take the evidence in front of you and do what you can with it. And that's how the book is. We don't know from chapter to chapter where we're going. But
it's riveting. I mean, it really keeps you guessing and you're wondering which direction Peggy's going to go. Is she going to do this? Is she going to do that? What would I choose if it was me? What would you choose? I mean, you said you remember your first love. I remember my first love. I think we all remember our first love and wonder, you know, you can't would have, could have, should have your life. You know, I live by that saying. But if you just sit in the fantasy of it all and think back, how would my life have changed? What would have been different? You know, you can't. I mean, I try to make that clear to people. Like, you can't go back and say, well, I could have done this. I would have done that. It's nice to daydream about it, but it's not anything that you can actually change. But in this particular case, I just found it really interesting. It's really a whodunit trying to figure out with these characters, like, where it's going, where this adventure is going. And it seems like you've just made it where anything is possible to happen.
Anything is possible, and the ordinary becomes the inordinary. But here's the thing of it. Many of my patients did go back in times of despair or broken marriages or whatever, did go back to find their first love because they wanted that same feeling. Unfortunately, most of them were disappointed. Most of them had outgrown their partner, but they didn't realize it. And so it's when people say you can't go back, they're probably almost always right. I'm going to test that theory on a personal level. We'll see.
So the reviews on this book are outstanding, people. If you're not sure that this is something for you, I highly advise you to go online, look at this particular book that Lori wrote, Lori Elizabeth Murphy, called Dream Me Over, and read the reviews. That the reviews alone have got to captivate you into reading this book because you really crafted such a romantic thriller. It could be a movie.
I hope it's going to be a movie. It's called Dream Me Home. And I do have somebody writing the script for it. So we'll see. Maybe crossing fingers, maybe it'll turn into a movie.
So, you know, what's been really fun is I started doing these author series, and it seems like you're my second. I've done some many, many months ago, but I've started to make this a regular practice here. And it seems like every wonderful author I get with these thrilling books and exciting books could be a screenplay, could definitely be something that you could see as a drama on TV or even, you know, just a little mini series or something like that. So with your sequel, I mean, are you going to continue with your characters to keep bringing them through books and do, you know, it just is the second sequel right now going to end the story, or are you going to keep going and keep us wanting more?
It's going to be a trilogy. I already know the third book and how it ends. The second book that I'm writing now, Peggy actually returns. So I'm not going to give anything away other than she's narrating the first book from the grave. She'll be narrating the second book. And I had to figure out how I was bringing her back, but I figured it out. So she loves to narrate her own story.
So I want to talk about, I mean, I think it's amazing. How do you go from being a registered nurse, psychotherapist, counselor? You have a degree from Mount Sinai Hospital School of Nursing, St. Joseph College. You've published so many nonfiction books, like I said, about parenting, which it seems to me very practical given what your background is. How do you take that and just turn it into a thriller, murder, mystery, science, like all of this, this adventure story, this thriller?
If you were ever a friend of mine when I was a teenager, you would have not wanted to go to the movies with me. That's where it started. We all went to the movies as a group. Everybody talked about the movie afterwards, how great it was. And I always said, but the ending should have been this way, or that person shouldn't have said such and such. And after a while, they were all like, don't invite Lori because she's going to change everything. I have always had stories in my head. And I'm sometimes disappointed if I read a good plot and flat characters, I'm like, no, you ruined it. Or I have really read really great characters, but the plot went nowhere fast. I'm like, oh, good, so good. So I tried very hard to combine all that I do and make really realistic characters that you think you know on a really good plot that moves quickly, because nobody has time to spend, you know, spending a lot of time. My chapters are short and you can do them quickly.
So let's talk about the title a little bit, Dream Me Home, because that's very interesting. You wouldn't get murder, thriller, adventure, mystery novel from that. Why that particular title?
I wrote the title before I finished the book, but I liked the title, so I kept it. It was always going to be just a love story. It turned out to be only one quarter love story and three quarters murder mystery. I didn't know it was going to be that way. The second book is going to be called Dreamy Gone. I'm going to stay with the dream theme, but I think we'll see that she's actually not dreaming.
Do you know there's a song out there by Mac Davis called Dream Me Home?
It's funny you mentioned his name, Mac Davis. I just talked about him last night.
Did you really?
I was trying to figure out if he sang If I Was a Carpenter and You Were a Lady, and I just Googled him, and Google said no, but I think he did.
He actually has a song called Dream Me Home, and I thought that was really interesting. So, of course, I went in to read the lyrics to see if there was any assimilation of his song to yours. Not necessarily, because that's really wanting. In a way, it is, because it's wanting somebody to come back into your life. Just a great love story. Well, I don't want to say a love story, because it is, but it's just chilling the way this I'm trying not to give anything away. I want people to, as Mac Davis would say, get hooked, because he wrote that song, Baby Don't Get Hooked on Me, get hooked on the conversation, to wonder, like, going back to your first love and being able to have the opportunity to try to do things over again, and then find out that when your marriage falls apart, how we can fall apart ourselves. And so it gives you an outlet, I think, for some people that are going through some of that. Try to sum up your favorite character for me in this book.
I would have to say my favorite character is Dr. Sherman, even though he's the least liked character. I really got a flavor in my mind of who he was, and he's just so egotistical and obnoxious and so... the kind of person that you would run from immediately, but Peggy couldn't run from him. She was obligated to be there in a way. And so she had to sustain all of his veiled insults and how she managed it. And it really goes to who she was as a character, because she was such a pleaser, and eventually she found her voice.
Okay, so for all of our listeners out there, if you're hearing this particular story, I'm taking it right from Dream Me Home, where it says, what begins as a whodunit mystery immersed in a love story soon transforms into an adventure where anything is possible. And that's where I was talking about Peggy's path of being able to take two directions. So give our listeners, besides what I've tried to say to entice them, give them a couple little nuggets to draw them into this book more.
Okay. So in therapy, when someone comes into the room, you don't know what they're there for. And they think they know why you're there. But they, you know, maybe they don't like your mother or their marriage is falling apart. But when you peel the layers of the onion, you find out deeper and deeper meanings to everything, and so do they. So I would always say to myself when someone comes in, why are you here? I would say this to myself. Why are you here? And what am I going to learn from you? And what will you learn from me? And that's how I organize my characters. I didn't really know anybody except Peggy. You know, I didn't develop anybody else. When they came in, when they showed up throughout the book, I would always say, what are they doing here? What journey am I going on? They led me on this path, which was perfect. I couldn't have written them without taking me there. I know this sounds crazy, but they decided how this book was going to go. I was just the person that was typing. That's all there was to it. And at the end, I would say to my husband, you would never believe what happened to Peggy. And he'd say, that's crazy. You wrote it. And I'm like, no, every day is a surprise.
Wow. Listeners, this is depending on your reading speed, this is like maybe a 6 to 7, 8 hour book to read. It doesn't take all that long. See, the problem with me, Lori, is every time I get a book, like my husband cannot talk to me. It's like, leave me alone. I go in a room and I'm like up all hours of the night. Can you get this book on Kindle Books or, you know, on Amazon Books or something? I'm a hard copy person. I like the physicality of having a book in my hands. But for those people that listen in their cars and want to read the book, can they get it that way?
Okay. The book is on Amazon Books or Barnes & Noble Books and at some other booksellers online and in bookshops. Or you can go to my webpage, which is laurimurphy.net. And there are two buttons there. One's Amazon Books and one's Netflix. Not Netflix. Oh, maybe that was a Freudian slip. And one is Barnes & Noble. And you can just hit that and it takes you directly to the link. It is also on Kindle.
It's awesome. It's so... For all of our listeners out there, you keep telling me that, you know, Peggy has a path to pick, two directions. But if it was you, listeners, which one would you pick? What would you choose? What would you do if you were in the same circumstances or other circumstances? We never know what we're going to pick. You know, is it our rational mind or our irrational mind that kicks in? So we can find this book on Amazon. This is Lori Elizabeth Murphy with Dream Me Home. And I appreciate it. Is there a website for you directly, Lori?
Lori Murphy, L-A-U-R-I-E, Murphy.net. And if I can just say an exciting thing that happened, the Creative Book Awards last night awarded me Best Book of 2024 in spring. So I know, I was so excited, really excited. So I think people are going to like it.
That's awesome. See, we always need a good thriller. And for those of you, spring weather is here. It's time to be sitting outside, enjoying the sun. It's definitely a great beach read. Definitely a book to take to the beach to read. And definitely for long trips, this is a perfect book to, well, maybe, you know, I'm starting to wonder if maybe you want to be that suspenseful in a car while you're driving, listening to your book, because it really is that good. I love a good whodunit. And you'll keep us posted when your next book is going to break?
I definitely will. I'm about halfway through writing it, so.
I can't wait. Come back and share it with us. I have to take a commercial break here, and I appreciate your time, and I want to let our listeners know that we have, again, been talking to Lori Elizabeth Murphy. The book is Dream Me Home, A Story of Betrayal, Infidelity, and Love. Great murder mystery thriller. And if you missed any part of this podcast, please come back and listen to it later. You are listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway, and we are going to take a quick commercial break before we bring our next authors on. Thank you, Lori. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Carol. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. Our house in the middle of our street.
Hi, this is Carol Holloway from Home Improvement Fix and Facts. Listen to me live every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 right here at WWDB. And if you can't listen live, make sure you go to WWDBAM.com and listen to my podcast. Each week, we will give you great ideas on how to fix your home and some facts on how to put it all together. In the middle of our streets,
our house. Hello, this is Erin, and I have a very important message. If you or a loved one is suffering with any sort of crisis, there is no need to do it alone. Dial the 988 Suicide and Crisis Hotline, where trained professionals will handle your case and get you the help you need any day, anytime. All reports are fully confidential. Dial 988, and a responder will do everything they can to assist you. Remember, if you see something, say something. You may just be saving someone's life. Remember, 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Hotline.
My guest for our second part of our author series. Your mic is on. I just want to let you know, Charlie, your mic is on. There we go. Thank you so much. I am excited. First of all, Houdini's Last Handcuffs, another amazing book. I started off the top of my show, Charlie, saying I have the best job ever because I get to interview fun people like you. Is Cheryl going to be joining us?
She is. Still, I have a little before 3:30. She usually comes on time. So I guess she'll pop in.
I'm glad you jumped in because I'm starting you early because I know with this particular book, we are not going to be able to, there she is. She's connecting now. We are not going to be able to get it all in a half an hour. There's so much information here. And Cheryl is muted as well, so we'll get her unmuted before we get into this. Okay, there she is.
Okay.
There she is. Yay! Okay. And sign language. Okay, you heard me start this with Strange Magic, ELO, just because this is an amazing book. Know that this is a new release, Houdini's Last Handcuffs. It just was released March 26th? Yes. 2 days after the original birth date of Houdini, which was March 24th, 1874?
Yes.
Do I have that right?
So 100 years. So 100 years anniversary. Yeah.
So I teased our listeners because you have a direct, you and your sister, and I don't care who answers these questions. You can fight over them like siblings.
Okay.
You guys have a direct connection to Houdini. Can you tell our listeners what that connection is?
Well, our father actually did meet Houdini when he was younger. And our father was an expert on magic. And when he was younger, he actually had an act, he levitated, and Houdini saw it and was impressed by it. And at the time, encouraged him to join the
Society of American Magicians. American
Magicians, which he didn't do at the time, but later in life he did. So
that's prestigious, isn't it, to be invited to be part of that club, that secret club?
Absolutely. Yeah, Houdini was president of it at the time. So it was, but our dad was in school at the time and didn't have a lot of funds to spend on joining the society. So he declined to join it at the time, but did later on.
So Cheryl, tell us more about, okay, so your dad knew Houdini directly. Houdini saw his act. Did they stay in touch?
No. But later on in life, my father became an avid collector of magic, and together with John McManus, they actually collected and donated to the Library of Congress their collection, which is where Houdini had also donated his collection. So we grew up collecting with our fathers, collecting magic items, but also knowing a lot of magicians participating in seances from a very early age. Charlie, maybe you want to take over?
Well, yeah, one of the other things that was instrumental in terms of the Houdini connection was that our dad met one of Houdini's personal secretaries, who happened to end up being a writer of the shadow novels. That was Walter Gibson. The shadow novels were Who Knows What Evil Lurks in the Hearts of Men, oh, The Shadow oh, Knows. Yeah.
Okay.
And they co-authored some magic books together, with Walter and my dad. One of them, Houdini's Fabulous Magic, which became sort of a staple and a major seller for them. That book was written about the time and period that our novel takes place. So the Walter Gibson was a lot in our life at the times. Walter had been designated by Houdini's widow, Bess Houdini, to take over the seances that she had been doing to try to contact with Houdini. And had our father participating in these seances, some of them which were on radio, but Long John Neville at the time was popular doing paranormal radio in New York City. Mm-hmm. Some of these seances were broadcast. The seance scene, even though I think Walter didn't believe it, my dad didn't believe, were part of our family growing up, along with the Houdini tradition and a very special pair of handcuffs.
Yes.
That our dad had was given by Elsie Hardeen, who was the widow of Hardeen, who was Houdini's brother, who was also a magician. And Hardeen had inherited everything from Houdini when he died, including these handcuffs. And then Elsie had given the handcuffs to our dad as the last pair of handcuffs that left the Houdini Hardeen estate.
Oh, wow.
And that was something that was in our home, always on display, and something that inspired us, I think, to write this book, because as children, we knew how special these handcuffs were. We were always seeing these seances occur, and had so much magic around the house and so many magicians coming to our home.
So the thing that I found really fun about this book, and again, it seems like every author I've interviewed has some type of fact with fiction. And you have done an amazing job of balancing your historical accuracy with the storytelling. Why did you do it that way? And what was the reasoning for it?
Well, there were, because of these magic connections and also other connections that our family had due to people that our parents had met during World War II, we had an unusual collection of friends that created this story for us, giving us real people to write the tale around. Eleanor Roosevelt had befriended my mom in World War II and was important in her going on and becoming a cryptographer, someone who decodes and deciphers codes. And she did that for the Allied forces in World War II. And that became a part of our book. I had also met Eleanor Roosevelt, maybe Cheryl did too, when we were in school. Eli Wallach, the actor, was in my dad's unit in the armed forces, and he was lived on Riverside Drive, 10 blocks away from us, and was part of he and his wife Ann Jackson were family friends growing up. Eartha Kitt lived in our penthouse. She would be down in the lobby with a boa constrictor wrapped around, that was her pet, wrapped around her, getting her mail at times. So all these people, including she was seeing and dating Orson Welles, I think at the time he was in the building. Artie Shaw was somebody who was also a person who we were familiar with the family, and listened to his music and listened to him play growing up. Umberto Eco, so many different fascinating people were part of our family milieu that it just was natural to use them in this tale.
How lucky were you two to have that exposure in your childhood to this world? New York, right?
Is this absolutely New York? Yes,
okay. Manhattan. That's the only place I could think of, right? Yeah, the heart of the city. Cheryl, I mean, this had to be tough because the two of you are co-authors. So what was your writing process like, and how is it different from what you guys would normally do for your own writing?
Well, I don't think either of us, this book started out, Charlie wrote a book. He wrote a novella.
Yes.
And he gave it to me to read. And I thought, wow, this is great. And it could be so much more.
We'd share the same experiences.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there was so many ways to develop what he'd started with, that we started to brainstorm together about it. And I would write something, I would be inspired by some situation and write something. And he'd take a look at it and he'd say, well, oh, I can see that. I think that could work here. Or he might say, maybe that's too far out, pull it back a little bit.
Yeah, we would remember different people and bring different characters in.
Wow. It's so interesting. So here's a question for you, Charlie. This is really amazing because my author last week, Bad Love Tigers, was a oncologist, Kevin Shuey. And then the author that I had on before you was a nurse and psychoanalyst. And here you are with a background in medicine as well. You were trained as a physician. So what is it? I'm starting to wonder if there's a connection. Is there something in your industry that makes you guys decide to start writing?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of science fiction physician writers, perhaps. So much of medicine seems science fiction, what we can do. Our dad was also an eye surgeon, which is what I went into. That was, an important part of what we wanted to do in this tale, was to tie in science and math and physics and the importance of that education. Even Houdini himself was a very educated man and used science in some of his tricks to make them occur, which is a lot of what happens today in terms of how a lot of magicians pull these magical shows off. They're using science to make it all happen.
I was going to ask you both about that, because I've seen many magicians, many magic shows live and in Vegas. I find them totally fascinating because to us it's an illusion. But you're right. It's science and math and figuring things out. It's stuff that I wouldn't pass in school. Did Houdini also know this, or was he just fortunate enough to figure it out? Or do you really need to understand the science and the math behind magic?
Yeah, he did. He was known, in addition for being a magician, he was an escape artist. And he, to be successful and not die at what he was doing, because it was dangerous, and other people who tried to imitate him actually, I think, did die. These tricks were risky. And he would, if you look back at his notebooks, there was one thing where he was being buried in underwater in a coffin, and he was going to outlast these fakers that said that they were, you know, in trances and using magic to keep them alive for so long buried underwater. And he said, no, it's just science. And he was very careful And if you look back at his notebooks, he took temperature readings at the underwater while he was underwater before these the tricks would go public. What the temperature of the coffin was at the head, what the temperature was down by his feet, where it was best for him to breathe longest. And then when he took the trick public, he also had, maybe for to make it seem more risky, he had a telephone in the coffin that he could call for help if he couldn't.
We know that.
If he wasn't going to last long enough. And he kept the batteries in the coffin and with him underwater. Now, why would you take precious airspace for batteries? And it's been suggested that a lot of the battery space was actually soda lime, which was used to take in the carbon dioxide that you would breathe out so he could last longer. So he was applying scientific method to his tricks way before, you know, this is back in the 1920s. And he knew enough to do this. And the notebooks, you know, there's evidence of that today. His notebooks show the meticulousness of his taking these temperature readings. So yes, he was very into science.
Wow. So I have to ask you both, the way your story starts, the way your novel starts out is on Halloween, three children, a brother and sister, and their friend receive a Ouija board from a family friend after a seance. The magician Houdini is brought back to life, but not by the seance itself. So tell us a little bit about how you interacted that story of Houdini coming back to life. And then I want to know if you both have ever used a Ouija board and if you believe in them.
Well, can we start with there were several things going on in the book. The adults actually were going out to a seance that evening, which was being held in Houdini's home up on 113th Street. And the children were gifted that Ouija board by Walter Gibson, who was the author of The Shadows, just before the folks left for the seance. So we had our own little thing with the Ouija board going, but totally unrelated to seances or Ouija boards, Houdini had come back, and that's how the handcuffs come into play there.
Okay, so I kind of mixed two different things together, the seance and the kids getting the Ouija board. Do you guys believe in Ouija boards? Do you think they have power? Is it the imagination?
I think it's the imagination.
but it's a good flow through for your imagination to materialize, to make things evident to people. I think that, you know, that there are people that manipulate things consciously and there are people that unconsciously may manipulate things. There is squeezes by better than the ones that are doing it on purpose.
Uh-huh. And I agree. I actually had bought one for myself so long ago. And then I was like, yeah, I don't think I want this in the house. But besides that, your book, it says the notebook contains the formula that everyone will want. Tell our listeners what you mean by that.
Houdini comes back with a purpose, and the purpose is to find his secret notebook that's been hidden away, and he enlists the children to find this for him. And the notebook is filled with not hocus pocus, but actual scientific formulas, one of which is the formula that he used to return. But it turns out that formula is flawed, and that is part of why he's come back, that he didn't want people to find this flawed formula and use it for wrong, and he had it potentially corrected. That is part of what the book is about, that there's a good group that wants to keep the notebook and use it all for good, and then there's an evil group that wants to steal the notebook and use the formulas for bad purposes.
Okay. So it's amazing because it's quite a nostalgic book. You know, looking at, again, another book with amazing reviews, another book that could be a movie for sure with all of these characters coming in and out from your childhood. I found that fascinating that you actually knew these people and were able to bring it into the book. What would you want our listeners to take away from this book? Either one of you or both of you, if you have your own separate opinion.
I think our main thrust here is that real magic is science and math, making the seemingly impossible possible. That we, you know, this for adults, but also for middle graders, you know, growing up, that we want them to understand that that's where the magic is in science, mm-hmm. science, math, physics.
Cheryl, do you feel the same way? Is there anything that you would like our listeners to take
away from this? I would like to add that that part of the book is that, you know, the child that's within you, that's always within you. And that as a child, you can perhaps see things more clearly than through the eyes of an adult, but that the innocence, the freshness of children, you know, that a piece of that remains in people as well, and not to forget that. I mean, this isn't a book just aimed at younger people. It's younger people, we are younger people telling the story, but it's really about everybody.
It's definitely a book for everybody because you do draw from real life people and places and objects that shape your story. And, you know, reading your quotes here, you have a passion and enthusiasm, and it does pour through every page, which leads me to the next question. You two have plans for a sequel. Is there anything that you can share about that?
Mm-hmm. Cheryl?
Well, at the end of the book, I mean, it's clearly the end of the book, and we could have left it there, but we both actually, we were enjoying this experience with our memories and with the people we knew. And we think that, you know, Houdini, so much more can happen still. So, we weren't ready to leave him, so it's a continuation from where this leaves off.
So I'm excited to find out more about that. You know, Cheryl, I found it interesting about you as well because you are active in the finance industry where you worked for 40 years in both Europe and the USA. And here you are, a co-author on a book about Houdini. I just thought that was fascinating. Like, what made you just say to your brother, like, yeah, I want to do this with you?
It's part of our life. I mean, I think just actually, probably a big trigger was when our father passed away. There was an incredible write-up in the New York Times, like a double page with pictures about him, and just realizing what a heritage that we really had. I think that wanting to share that with other people was what made me get involved, because you're right, this is far afield from the financial.
So far industry. From what you do. I have another question. I know I'm running out of time here. I only have, you know, probably about 5 minutes left here, but can you both tell me about Music, Magic, and More? What's that all about?
Well, to start with the music, and Charlie can add about his more, some of it more. The music companies are something that my uncle was very active in the music business. And that's actually why we knew Artie Shaw and Vincent Lopez and other people from that era, is because they were also part of our life. And these are the oldest. My uncle bought Jenton and Haskins is the oldest independent music publishing company. It's no longer actively publishing like current music, but we still are licensing rights to the songs that are from that era. So we inherit, when my uncle passed, my father inherited the companies. And then when my father, well, actually, while he was still alive, he gave my brother and myself the companies. So we took that over. So that's the music side. And Charlie's actually done some podcasts on
Unimay Carlisle. Some radio podcasts for yes. WCF in Florida, the station. So we have many good placements of the music. So the music companies are still active, but they prompted part of the story. And then part of Music, Magic, and More, I did develop an artistic interest. And so I paint. So there's a one of the websites for my painting business, let's say, is online there as well. So it's Music, Magic, and More.
And it's actually a website, musicmagicandmore.com.
.com.
One other thing that in addition to Houdini's Last Handcuffs, we had Vine Leaves Press, our publisher, had reprinted Houdini's Fabulous Magic, which is a classic in its field. It's the book that our father wrote with Walter at the time, around the time that our book is taking place. So that is also on this website on Music, Magic, and More. In addition to Houdini's Last Handcuffs, also Houdini's Fabulous Magic is there, as well as a blog that Charlie predominantly
produces.
Posts on.
I love it. There is so much information in this book, so much factual information combined with childhood fantasies, and magic itself. I found it fascinating. I look forward to a sequel. And can you tell our listeners where they can find this book? And is it also an audiobook?
It's available on our website, houdinislasthandcuffs.com. You can find click buttons there. You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, or your favorite indie store. And I believe our publisher now also has a store on their website, vineleavespress.com as well.
Wow. You guys have been amazing. Come back when you have the sequel so we can talk about this some more. We have been talking to Charlie and Cheryl Young. I can't pronounce your last name, Cheryl, so I'm not saying it.
Decknoddle.
Say that again.
Decknoddle.
Decknoddle. That's not what's on the front of the book.
No, because Cheryl Young is it. I will remain young forever.
There you go. I love it. That's perfect last name. So listeners, we have been here with Charlie and Cheryl Young. Their book is, as they call it, a literary gut punch, Houdini's Last Handcuffs. It's just thrilling to read the history with the fantasy and the fun. And I thank you both so much for coming on board and sharing this with us. Like I said, I'm so lucky to be able to talk to people like you and share these amazing books. Thank you so much for your time. And again, come back, please.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. Listeners, you've been listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. We will be back next week with some more exciting topics. And I do have another author to bring on board next week. I will promo it on my Instagram page. You can follow me there. And don't forget, it's Earth Day. So please take care of our Earth and do something nice. You know, the theme for this year is planet versus plastics. And tomorrow in Pennsylvania is primary day. Get out and vote. Do your civic duty. You have a right like nobody else in this country, in this world has. So do it. Get out and vote. And we'll be back to next week with some great topics. Like I said, another author. So you have to stay tuned for that. And I also want to remind everybody that tomorrow morning from 8 to 9 is my Home Improvement Fix and Fact Show, where we're going to break down how politics actually does affect your home and your neighborhood and your livelihood. So I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back next week, same place, same time. Pay it forward and do something nice for someone. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate your time. Charlie and Cheryl, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.